the gift of witchcraft.
I was able to see, hear, and communicate with spirits.
A very personal relationship between a person and spirit.
Carnal lust and fun things like that.
Working with different energies and spirits and communicating.
Creating magic.
Powerful ritual and powerful spells.
She's actually sending me in the cauldron.
The role of the witch is to make change.
Bless it be, yo.
Bless it be.
People ask me, like, okay, I'm a witch and I don't know what to do.
20 years ago, three young friends realized they were witches. They scattered to different parts of the world, following magic and spirit. Now, they're back in their hometown to share what they've learned.
Welcome to That Witch Life Podcast, your home for living as a witch in today's world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of That Witch Life Podcast. I am Courtney, and I'm here with...
Kanani.
Yes, and we have terrible news. And that it's just the two of us today, because Hillary is out very, very sick with either the flu or food poisoning. Either way, she has asked for us to magically teleport her some Pedialyte. So we're going to try that at the end of the day. She is not feeling well and sends her regards that she is not with us. And that being said, we're in Kanani's bedroom, which is super weird and funny.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
Podcasting from my room is not something I anticipated doing, but
no,
apparently
I feel
works.
Like we should be listening to Boys to Men and crank calling people.
Yes.
Like in the old days. But you know, one of the things I like about your room is that you've got like little different energetic centers set up everywhere. So first of all, we can talk about me and that you have like a shrine to me over here in the corner.
I do.
It's weird. It's like, as much as you don't like me, you actually have a shrine going
on. I do.
It's a picture of us on my wedding day, and you are one of my matrons of honor. And we're just making this really completely insane face, and you can't decide if we look sweet or completely psychotic, along with your table number from our reception. And then you put gargoyles on it, too. So what is that about? Are you sending... But it's a gargoyle that's reading. Are you sending
yes,
me inspiration?
I am. Author vibes.
So you just came up with this now. This is
I
not,
did.
She
I did. That was not the intent, but I'm going to say that that was the intent. I totally do. I have my Kanani Courtney altar with the, and it even has at the bottom of the tables, the table number, it has the corsage that I wore at your wedding.
I'm taking a picture of it.
You totally should. And then I do have these adorable, I bought them from a Saturday market probably 12, 15 years ago, these little gargoyles. One of them holds an incense cone, and then the other one holds a taper, and it's a gargoyle reading a book, and I absolutely love it. They were handmade, carved little creatures, and I wanted all of them, but of course, 12 years ago, I didn't have any money, and so to be able to buy one was
yeah.
a feat, and the artist who made them no longer sells them, otherwise I would buy all of them and have them throughout my house. But I absolutely love them.
And you also, your bathroom is full of magical supplies and crystals and things and your unicorn horns.
Yes, I have lots of unicorn horns
and oils.
Next to my essential oils.
This is like a Marie Kondo dream bathroom, honestly. You've got everything. I know you haven't watched Marie Kondo. But,
oh, I did.
Oh, you
oh,
did?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but it's like super organized. And then you've got your corner, which is your actual altar.
Yes.
It has the books in there that you said you've read.
Yes.
Which includes mine, which we know you haven't read. You know,
yours, I hate to say it, I don't think yours made that shelf.
Yeah, I see it right there. It's tarot for one.
Oh,
one,
okay.
I dedicated.
One of them did. Okay.
Oh my
god. The others are in the
Jesus.
Other magical bookshelf. I have multiple magical bookshelves.
So tell us, again, what is the purpose of these different energetic centers that you have going on?
I tend to kind of have, they are very different spaces. So I do have kind of that little Kanani Courtney altar that I kind of have going on. And then I do have my main altar. And my main altar, it's actually a nightstand that I had bought at a garage sale. And so it's perfect because it's a nightstand. So it has a top and then it has the kind of indent below it, which is where I keep all my books. So the altar goes on top, the books go in the middle, and it has a drawer at the bottom. And then the drawer is where I keep my magical supplies. So it's actually really awesome. And so that's what I use. And on that, I've got my pentacle. I have a white and a black candle, and then I have the small, tiny candle holders.
Noticing your black candle is far more burned than your white
yes.
candle, which means you definitely were grinding a magical axe
yes.
with someone.
Yes.
Okay. You don't have to tell us who.
Yes. And then I've got my Rose of Jericho on there, and then I have my pentacle, a little incense burner, sage, I have a little bell, and I actually also have a
pendulum.
Pendulum, thank you. And then underneath I've got my books and incense burner and this beautiful card that I actually bought when we met Janet and Gavin at that first festival
like
that I went to, Harvest
ago.
Moon.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful postcard, and it has a picture of Pan and kind of just a goddess figure, and they're kind of embracing.
She's a nymph.
And then above it, I've got some, one is a painting that a friend of mine drew that's just beautiful. And it was literally sitting in his garage and it was covered in dust. And I'm like, this is beautiful.
Is the one that's the moon and the trees?
Yes, it's the moon and the trees. Maddie made that. And I was like, this is beautiful. Why don't you have this displayed? And he's like, I don't know. I just made it one day. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to take it since you don't know how to care for it. And I put it up near my altar and I just love it. And then above that, actually, which I think is really, people would probably think is pretty cool. I like to say that I collected fairies before fairies were cool, and people think I'm kidding, but I'm really not, because I started collecting fairy things before you could buy them in the store.
Mm.
For a few years, my mom asked me, please, for the love, collect anything other than fairies, because I can't find fairies anywhere. They did not exist. I was at a little street market in a town that I didn't live in, and it was in Washington, and they had these boxes of pictures, and I went through these boxes of pictures, and there were tons of fairy pictures. And I was like, oh my God, I've never seen fairy pictures like this. So now I wish, of course, that I had bought them all. I only bought like four or five, but I never got them. So I bought a lot more of them than I usually would. They were random sizes from like 8x10 to slightly bigger. Their original Amy Brown art.
Oh my.
Her friend was literally trying to get rid of them because no one was buying them.
So they're actually really worth something.
They're worth something. And so that's why it's framed and not just... Because I don't want to admit this, but I have some that... They're still in the plastic, but I have some that I still don't have out yet. Some of them are numbered even. But her friend was literally selling this because no one bought them. No one knew who Amy Brown was. She wasn't in Spencer's. She wasn't on every calendar, on every mug yet.
Yeah.
So I actually have some original Amy Brown art pieces, which I absolutely love. And then it was only a couple years later that all of a sudden she was all over Spencer's and every t-shirt and mug and ornament and everything you could slap a fairy on, she was on. And then I could find fairy stuff everywhere I wanted. But so I have one of those pieces also framed above my altar. And what's really funny is my husband has a bookshelf and he does not practice. However, the top of his bookshelf is like almost a familial altar, because it's pictures of him and all his family.
Yeah.
Every member of his family is in a picture on the top of his bookshelf. And if you didn't know any better, you would think that he had his own ancestral altar. And I've told him that before, and he just kind of laughs it off. And then I have another tabletop space that I actually do some spell work at. And that has some different pieces and stuff with candles that I've anointed and done magical works with.
It's really funny. I think a lot of times people talk about setting up an altar when you start working with witchcraft. And I do think that there is something important to that. But I also think that your spaces just kind of become altars unwittingly.
Yes.
It used to be
yes.
Somebody said you can't really go to Courtney's house and set your drink down anywhere because you're setting it down on someone's, on an altar to someone. And then you can't get back. But so it kind of lends its way into, you know, what we're going to be talking about today, which is about, you know, cleansing and organizing energy in your home and what
yes.
to do and how to keep the magical flow going in a home, because that's really, really important for witches. I don't know any witch. And it's funny because I honestly know a lot of witches that's an area of their life they tend to neglect. And I've known a lot of witches who have like serious hoarding tendencies. I don't mean like pack rats. I mean like an actual
hoarding,
you know,
problem.
An actual hoarding problem.
Yeah.
Or that they don't clean. They just don't,
yeah.
you know, they don't clean, or you let, and I'm not sure what that's about. It's like, and they're good witches, but they also find that there are parts of their life that are in some pretty serious disarray. And the witches that I find that are the most successful, both in their personal and their magical lives, are the ones that are keeping energetically balanced homes.
Yes.
And this doesn't mean that you can't be a clutter person, because I know some witches that do collect a lot of stuff.
Yes.
But it's with an intention, and it's with, I've seen pictures of some other witches' homes where they're just like packed with books and they've got lots of really neat stuff. And it's like, we're, you know, but they just managed to have organized it in a really, it's with an intention behind it.
Yes,
it's not just like,
it's not just random clutter.
And I think that that's what place where I really need to grow, because I get so focused into my work and things like that, and I notice that stuff just gets piled up, and I think that that's one thing I've got to work on, is like getting rid of paper that needs to get shredded,
yeah,
or receipts.
I think also kind of what you touched on, which maybe people don't, especially people new coming into it, may not realize is, you know, a lot of times you start with a space and you just kind of set something down.
Yeah.
And it's not done with any intention that it becomes an altar, but suddenly things start to collect around it. And suddenly it becomes to be a place where maybe you light candles, or now suddenly this is the place where you're burning all your incense, or you're doing all these things. And it just kind of manifests itself into an altar until eventually, like, the top of my bookshelf, where it's like, okay, well, this is where I do magical things. I don't just set things here anymore.
Right.
And so they just kind of manifest themselves.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily... look at it and think, oh, that's an altar.
It just becomes something.
Yeah, it becomes its own sacred space.
Right. Yeah. How's your week going? I haven't recorded in a little while.
My week has been a little nutty. My son got hurt. He decided to get in a fight with the asphalt with his face.
Oh, I know. It's awful. The asphalt won,
as it usually does. And so that was pretty traumatizing for myself and my husband to see my little son's face all scratched up, but he got a donut after the doctor's office and was able to eat ice cream after dinner. And so he pretty much thought that was the greatest day ever. So even though I was completely traumatized,
we were
talking
about
a great day.
That you said this is what you needed.
Oh, it was just, I know. Don't get me wrong. I ate ice cream with him. I didn't eat a donut with him. I was still so traumatized by the entire doctor event that I couldn't have choked down a donut if I wanted to, but he just thought that was like the greatest day ever, that all he had to do was fall down and scratch up his face and suddenly he gets all these desserts and treats and spoiled and got to pick the movie for the night, and he just thought he was just living like a king. So yeah, that was not the best.
So I'm non-magical book reading. I've been reading Moby's biography, or his memoir, and I actually knew Moby briefly when I was living in New York City, and he posed for my tarot deck. He's a really nice guy. Was interested, and I was remembering how I told you Moby had agreed to pose for my tarot deck, but that I couldn't tell anyone because I wasn't sure if it was going to happen. And then I said, you later told me, I said, Tiffany, you didn't tell anyone, did you? And you said, no, because I couldn't remember the guy's name. I'd never heard of him before.
I had no idea who Moby was. Like, legit, no idea. And she's like, it's Moby. I'm like, I don't know what this means.
And here's, you know, and I was reading it, and I was like, wow, this guy's life has been so tragic and so, you know, at the same time, so exhilarating. And I was feeling a kind of way about it, because we've been living these parallel tracks, but I had never gotten into that really. I never hung out with David Bowie. You know, I never hung. I went to one party at Moby's house, but I didn't go to like the places where he was talking about. And then all of a sudden, it's coming out that he made up a lot of the stuff or exaggerated it, especially with things regarding Natalie Portman. And
yes,
it's really,
I've heard this,
and it's really sad because, you know, he's someone who was very kind to me in the time that I knew him. But then also to hear that he's, you know, made this kind of mistake, and it's just really. I'll tell you a story about Moby that was very funny. One of the times that we met, he thought I was either a crackhead or meth head, some kind of...
Nice!
I was doing a character.
I told him that, by the way.
No, you didn't have to. So I was doing this character, which was... I called her Gina the Crack Whore Poet. Now, I don't know if she was necessarily on crack, just more like this nebulous drug addict person. And I would wear these army cutoffs and this nasty shirt and would walk around panhandling the audience at these underground things. And I ran into... I was selling condoms. It was the New York City condoms. I was selling them in order to raise money, and they're free. That's what's funny about them. They collected a bunch of them and sold them all for $1 a piece. We, you know, glued sequins on them. And Moby was there, and I tried to sell him condoms, and he didn't buy any, but he did give me some money for the donation. And then I was in my character. I was like, "Can I be your girlfriend?" And then he was like really uncomfortable.
That's awesome.
And he's like, "What do why?" And I said, "I think you're a nice person." He's like, well, don't you think we should get to know each other? And I was like, well, I just can tell you're a good person. And he didn't, I realized then he didn't know I was performing. Because then he asked me, are you performing tonight, Gina? And I said, I'm going to read a poem. And he like put his hand on my arm and he said, well, I have to go, but I really hope that you do well when you read your poem tonight. And like so much compassion for this woman he thought was a degenerate drug addict. Hadn't showered in days person. And so I'm just really sorry that this has happened to him, but it's also made me feel a little less insecure reading the book. Like, okay, I don't know that it was as fabulous as he said it was.
Yeah.
So maybe I didn't miss out on everything. And it also is, I don't know, you know, I think it just gets you in the space where you think you really project onto other people what you think is going on with them.
Yes.
And then that honestly causes so many problems. Like, honestly, some of the magical problems I've had are from people that sent me stuff, sent out jinxes, curses, whatever, because they believed that I had something that they didn't, or right. that I was acting in a way toward them that I wasn't. And then just through readings or other confirmations, I found out they built up the story in their head about who I was, or they thought I was, you know, more successful than I am, or was living a life that they, you know, envied. And you know, maybe there are things about my life that they envy, but chances are there are a lot of that is stuff that they have made up.
Right. They think you live this super glamorous life and you just never have to think about money and you just have money everywhere and a giant house. And
it's like, well, I'm actually working two, you could say three jobs.
Yeah.
And you know, it's tough.
And it's like, yes, I can buy dinner, but I can't necessarily go out to dinner at any restaurant I want.
I'm not boarding a private jet. And also I wouldn't even if I had that, because I think that that's ecologically insensitive, but you know, so it's just funny what those kinds of things. So I don't know. I'm sad to hear that someone who was so kind to me and was part of this project that I was really, that the Tarot of the Burrows deck that I put together has gone this direction. Like, he's canceled the rest of his book tour and everything, and it's just, I don't know.
Really? Because of everything that came out?
He did. He canceled his book tour. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and I think, so, I mean, this kind of gets into the whole, you know, Me Too concept and stuff, but I think one of the more interesting things that has come out of this, and I hope that men particularly, and women, I guess, in some regard, will take the time to understand. And that is that women are saying, this is what you did, and this is how it made me feel. And men are saying, no, that's not what I did. And that's not at all what happened. The reality is that both of those people can feel that, and it's true for both of them. So it's not like, I guess this is my thoughts on this. It's not like the men feel like they did that. It doesn't mean they didn't, but it means that they don't understand.
Yeah.
So it gets hard because they were wrong and what they did was wrong. And the women have every right to feel the way they feel. But I think that's where men actually have to learn to step back and look at it from a different perspective and realize that just like anything in life, even with siblings can live the same event and come away with it with completely different feelings.
Yeah. And that's something.
You're not going to be able to get one sibling to convince the other sibling, no, that's not how it happened.
Right. I think though, where I really felt for Natalie and I was actually talking about this with my husband, cause it's like, oh, and like you said, there's stories that have two people, every story has two sides. There's a sense in which I feel sometimes people, especially men, and not, you know, hashtag not all men. Yes, we know. But it tends to be, especially men are going to like have this feeling of entitlement that their version of the story is the
100%.
Way. And this happened to me when I was working, I've been working for years, but when I was waitressing, I broke up with my boyfriend that afternoon, like between shifts. I went to go see him between shifts and he dumped me, and then
nice.
I went back to work. So I came back to work like, yeah, so this happened. And I went out for drinks with my coworkers afterward, and everybody else wanted to go home and I wanted to stay out. And so one guy stood behind and said, well, I'll hang out with you. I'm like, okay, you know, and Kanani's rolling her eyes.
Opportunistic.
Kanani rolls her eyes. So I took him to a dance club because I wanted to dance, and we're just talking for a while, and I thought we were friends. And then my song, whatever song it was, plays. I'm like, oh my God. And so I run to the dance floor. And he runs after me and he starts literally putting his hands all over
Ugh.
Me. And I pulled away. And then later, of course, I blame myself saying, oh, did I leave him on? And looking back, I'm like, no.
No, you
we
didn't.
Were just going out, and it ended up being the two of us. I'm like, I want to dance. And so I ended up leaving, and he followed me and was like apologizing and then trying to convince me to come home with him and saying, I don't believe in sex before marriage. I just want to hold you. And I went, I just want to go home. Okay.
Yeah. I just want you not to touch me.
And so whatever, I let it go because I realized he screwed up and I was trying to be nice about it. But then later people at work were telling me that he was going around bragging that we'd been grinding. And I confronted him about it. I said, excuse me, I didn't tell anyone what happened because you were so embarrassed. And you went and told people that we were grinding. And he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. And then he tried to hug me. So
such a pig.
So, okay, what did he say? Was it untrue? Yeah, we were grinding for a minute when he came over and started grinding with me. And
right.
I'm like, no.
That's actually a really great example. That's a really great example.
Yeah, that happened, but not because I wanted to grind with him. It's because I just wanted to dance.
And I think also with a lot of this stuff, like especially with like the Natalie Portman thing, where it's kind of like, you know, yes, he did this, and yes, his intent wasn't to make her uncomfortable, but it did.
It did.
And that's where I get frustrated, and I wish men would step back and say, someone's not necessarily trying to demonizing you to say that you did this, even though it was a crappy thing to do, because you probably didn't realize it was a crappy thing to do at the time. So when someone calls it to your attention, and they say, hey, just so you know, that wasn't wanted, that wasn't a appreciated advance, instead of getting defensive and being like, well, I didn't mean it that way, that wasn't my intention, just go, man, I'm really sorry.
I'm sorry, I remember
I'm
it.
Sorry. I'm like, that's it. I'm sorry. And you can say, that wasn't my intention.
And also, especially when you're
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Acknowledge that just because you weren't trying to be a gross perv, doesn't
you were
mean,
being gross person.
Yeah, doesn't mean you weren't being one. I think it's difficult, too, because when you yourself as an artist, like you said, he's actually a really big part of the Tarot of the Burrows. So I think that can make it really complicated, too, for other artists. When an artist does something like this, like there's, I mean, I'm sure hundreds of people that associate with him that for a long time kind of was a feather in their cap.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of like,
I was in a tarot deck with Moby, and for me, I used to, that's like, hey, I did this tarot deck and Moby's in it. He's my king of coins.
Yeah.
And I can't say enough good stuff about my experience with him. He was really lovely. And I went to a party at his house and he was a lovely host. We short sheeted the beds in his house. And
I got that phone call when you were drunk doing that. And that was another time where you're like, I'm at Moby's house. We're short sheeting the beds. And I'm like, who the fuck is Moby? I don't know who Moby is. To this day, I can promise you I couldn't name a song.
But you've heard them.
He sings, though, right?
He's a DJ. He doesn't sing.
Oh, see, I didn't even know that. I thought he was a singer.
No. So you heard his music because you lived through the 90s.
Okay.
So if I played some of it, you'd be like, yeah.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
But no, that is one of the things that I hope comes out of this whole movement and stuff like that, is because I do try and understand that times were different. I mean, that is the sad, sad reality. Times were different. And so there was a certain level of behavior from men that was accepted as it may be gross, but like they still felt like they could get away with it. And that I think that they didn't always understand was gross. And
right.
It's like now that it's being pointed out, even if that wasn't what you were trying to do, just say, fuck, I'm sorry.
And also,
I'm sorry. I didn't, you know, I'm so sorry if that hurt your feelings. I'm so sorry if, you know, that's it. Just own it. Own it and be sorry and realize
and
that not everyone, not everyone is trying to demonize you over it.
And also, like, I think Moby would still know who I was if somebody mentioned me to him, but chances are he's met a lot of people. I might have just disappeared. But if people were to say, well, what's your take on this? I could say I can still speak fondly of my personal experiences with him and also say, and he screwed up.
Yeah.
And he made a mistake. I'm not going to say that couldn't have possibly happened because I had a good experience.
Right.
Because
you hung out with him three different times.
Three different
times.
So
clearly you know that
seven different times. But still. So
the other millions of times that you weren't there, you can say exactly how he would have behaved.
It's like for people in your life when they do this, it's not like you have to stay on their side and deny that they've done it. It's like, it's okay to say, you know what? I have respect for this person because of what my experience with them, but I also am, you know, also being mindful, or don't even say, but say, and I'm paying attention to the fact that he's, he's screwed up here.
Yeah.
And that's a huge problem. And, you know, I just kind of, I hope.
Those two things can exist.
They can exist.
They can coexist at the same time.
Right. And it does, like you said, it does make it more of a challenge for me promoting my deck now and saying, yeah, Moby's in it. Like,
yeah, that used to be like a super cool thing.
And now it's kind of like,
yeah,
not sure, but I don't know. I'll work through it. Hey, but you know what? It's an awesome deck in its own right.
It is.
Maybe I don't need a rock star to make it awesome. Maybe it's because I did the deck that the deck is awesome.
Like, yes. And if I hadn't been poor and in my 20s and unable to fly out to New York, I would have been in the deck. But of course, back then when we had no money and we were young kids, it was just like, yeah, no.
Well, honestly, though, it was really important that we did use New Yorkers. So importing an Oregonian
true.
In it.
That's
we
true.
Could have found a way to stick you in there, though.
I know. That was the plan. By. But we were both so poor, it was like, yeah, I'm not going to be able to afford
it.
I'm not going to be able to afford a plane ticket out there.
Yeah, and also, anyway, but probably get back on track with what we were talking about before, is the energy work. All right, so as per usual, we're bringing in people who know more than we do and who are smarter, and in this case, a lot more interesting.
Oh, please.
And we're bringing in Damon Stang, who is a scholar of comparative folk magic and the cultural significance of ritual in contemporary cultures. He is a practitioner of traditional European witchcraft in both the pre-Christian and modern lineages. He resides in Brooklyn, New York, and is a senior spiritual consultant and diviner at Catlan Books. Damon Stang's work has been covered in the New York Times, the Huffington Post, the New York Post, Elle Magazine, and Newsweek. I wish you all could see what we see in the Skype right now, which is this absolutely gorgeous background, and Damon was dancing along as we were talking about him.
I freaking love it. He's got, like, incense burning and a candle.
And
like,
a skull with antlers.
He's all magical, and his background is fabulous. I'm wearing a shirt that says, I can't adult today.
I'm wearing a shirt that says, where my witch is at, and we're both wearing unicorn
horns. And we're sitting on a bed, and there's, like, nothing fabulous about
in
this.
In suburban Oregon.
Exactly.
It took a lot of time for me to put on pants today.
There we go.
Yeah. So you were saying something about waking up with a blindfold still on?
Well, yeah, because, you know, I have this bedroom that for a few years now, I haven't had a curtain on. And the reason is because I have this beautiful tree that grows outside of my window, and it's just divine. It's all full of leaves and all full of birds, and I just love waking up to see it. So I don't have curtains, also because I'm lazy.
yes!
And I can't do the DIY thing. So the tree operates as my curtain. You know, it shields me from the neighbors. So when I go to sleep, I hoodwink myself. I tie a blindfold. You know, I put a sleep mask on, you know? I like to have the natural rhythms of the light and the dark. So, yeah, but yes, I was coming back from a bacchanal last night. A bacchanal. I woke up with my blindfold on and I was like, what day is this? What do I have to do? Somebody wants me to do something. And somebody wants me to do something tomorrow. Have I fucked everything up? No, here I am.
Oh my God, this is why I love this.
I've shown up.
I love this. I love this witch.
I'm very proud of myself.
I love this witch so much. So I'm in New York pretty regularly. And when I see Damon, we usually get together, drink a lot of wine, and usually laugh loudly and cry softly together. And that's like usually...
That's a very good description.
Of how it happens. And I love it because you can always tell who Damon and I are because we're the only ones in these New York bars reading books. We carry hardback books with us wherever we go. And it's like... And I remember walking in, seeing Damon sitting at the bar, everybody else is on their iPhone. He's wrapped in what looks like a wolfskin cape. And he's reading a hardcover book at the bar, like a tome.
That's not awesome.
I said, that's my so friend. Awesome. So... Meanwhile, we start out our shows by asking our guests, how did you know you were a witch? And I know your story is very interesting, so please enlighten the people.
Well, you know, I'm sure that everybody's story is interesting. I'm sure everybody's story is interesting. Let me see. Okay, so I grew up in South Africa, a different country, and I grew up in a very strange political time in South Africa, and I grew up with a mom who was very radical, actually, is the word that I would use, and politically active. But my family, even before the politics, was very eccentric. So fairies, for instance, was always part of our childhood, you know, and that happened with my all of our cousins, everybody, you know, like not just my like cluster family, everybody, you know, we were raised to believe that fairies were real, and we had things that we did with fairies. I mean, my family is Catholic, straight up. Like none of my aunties would identify as anything other than Catholic. But we had all of these things that we used to do. Tiny little things, not like big things, you know. Like the first spell that I ever learned was when I got a wart on my wrist as a child. And I was horrified, and it was the first time that I'd experienced something that had happened to my body that I couldn't control.
Mm.
You know, it was my first experience of, of bodily trauma. You know, privilege, but yeah, there it was, this big wart that grew on my wrist, and so my mother was like, "Don't worry about it, we'll blow it to the moon."
Oh my God!
No, really, really, she was like, "Let's blow it to the moon." She was like, "We'll wait till the full moon, and when the full moon comes out, we'll walk to the full moon. And you'll kiss it three times, and you'll turn around in a left way circle, and you won't look back at the moon, and I'll put a band-aid over it, and when the moon is no longer full, when it's gone from the sky, it will be gone." And guess what? It happened.
Oh my God.
My mother cured my wart. That was my first experience of magic. That was my very, very first experience of magic. It was very real. It was, you know, because my mom's from an old Scots family. Now, I'm not trying to claim any kind of lineage. You know, they just preserve a few little folk traditions.
They just did things.
Yeah, they just keep a few folk traditions, you know. And fairies were one of the things as well. It's like, put some things in the bottom of the garden for the fairies. And we did that. And so I was raised in that vibe, you know. And my family were folk Catholics. Not, you know, my family gave no fucks to Rome. So there was a lot of that stuff going on. And now today my mother does identify as a witch, but none of them did at that time. So anyway, so there was a very open environment for this kind of development to happen. I mean, my mother had a rose garden. She would be like, bury the beetles in the ground, you know, when they die, you know, make a little funeral for them. Let's put some St. John's wort by the garden gate, you know, to keep evil spirits away. There was a lot of that stuff going on in my family. So it wasn't so, all right, but to answer your question, I'm sorry, I'm being a little bit a roundabout, but to answer your question, one day I was in a bookshop in my town, and I found Scott Cunningham's really, really silly little, I would call it a tract. I would call it a religious tract. It was called Witchcraft Today.
Yes, I think I've read, that's one of the Cunningham books that I've read.
It's tiny.
Yeah.
It's tiny. It's literally a religious tract, actually. And it was really funny because it had this picture of a lady in a business suit.
like a late 80s business suit with the shoulder pads and the collar.
Yes. Yes. And today I wish I still had a copy of that book, because it's actually fucking hilarious that that's the picture that they put on the front of it. But I read that book. I found it in a bookstore. Now, granted, I've been doing a lot of occult research in the library before, okay, because I was a real library nerd, so I go to the public library and just read the occult section, and then the section about homosexuality as well, because I was trying to figure out if there was something wrong with me.
Was it your experience with the fairies and with the fae, was that kind of why you went occult route?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Definitely. Yeah, I've always been a fairy witch, yeah.
You know, then I did a lot of research in the library as a child, and I started studying occultism and tarot, and then, I found Scott Cunningham's really ridiculous book. I mean, not ridiculous book, it was actually already, I'm sure that book saved a lot of people's lives, and especially gay people's lives. And I'm very sad that Scott Cunningham never got to come out during his life. Which I think is something that nobody talks about, by the way, is that he was never allowed to come out as a gay man because he was selling so many books, and Wicca at that point was extremely homophobic,
yes.
Actually. Anyway, conversation for another time, but yeah, so that book pretty much pulled me out of the broom closet, and at the end of the day, much later down the line, a lot of other closets, but as I said, you know, because I've already told the story, short story, long story short, my mother told me I had to go to catechism, I had to go all the way up to confirmation. If I decided at the line of confirmation that I didn't want to be Catholic, then she would give me her blessings, and I should and could become a witch. And yeah, so I did exactly that journey, which I think is actually a pretty cool journey, actually. I did it intentionally. I know more about the Catholic Church than most people, most pagans.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I did confirmation as well, went all the way through 5 years of Catholic school on top of that.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that, there's a couple of things you touched on. One is I think that there actually are a lot of people who are practicing Catholics who do, especially around the world, who do also involve the fae, and they somehow kind of live simultaneously without one saying, you know, willing to acknowledge that one has anything magical over the other. They just kind of, they bring it with them. And I think that there's a lot of people who just also practice witchcraft, but are just too afraid to call it that.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a very complex and nuanced conversation, because in terms of the fairy faith, yes, absolutely. In certain circles, they call that dual observance, like holding two faiths at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to steer us back to the topic we had at hand, in that we wanted to talk about building healthy energetic practices within the home, like how you keep your home a balanced, whole energetic space. And I know that you have done work in Brooklyn, other places, helping people with that when they've had like really nasty entities or ghosts or other things in their house. I know that you've gone out into, I think you and our friend Gary went to a Hasidic Jewish home once and did a whole cleansing.
Yeah,
on
Sephardic,
it.
Actually.
Oh, okay.
Sephardic
Jewish family. So tell us about what that means to you. What does a healthy, energetic home look like?
Here's where I am in my practice right now. It's very ancestral, and it's very land-based, and it's very ancestral-based. That's sort of like a lead-up to saying people's mileage may vary. And what I mean by that is there are different ways that one might want to cleanse a home if, say, one was not a practitioner of witchcraft or any other kind of spiritual practice, which as a spiritual provider I always make available, because not everybody needs to be a priest, not everybody needs to be clergy, not everybody needs to be involved, you know? it's not everybody's journey. But then there are practitioners, then there are priests and priestesses, and people whose job it is to maintain the balance of spirits. So I believe that there's a difference between the two categories. And it's not a hierarchical difference, it's just a difference. So in my practice, as a sort of a sorceress witch, as a pre-Christian sorceress witch who doesn't truck with any kind of saints or no godliness whatsoever, I believe that the very first thing that one should do is to decide what one's home is. Is it a temporary dwelling? Or is it a permanent dwelling? Or is it a semi-permanent dwelling? All of these are valid answers. Like, what is your shelter? What is your shelter? Because the spells that you're going to do and the cleansings and the processes that you're going to do are going to be different depending upon the shelter that you choose. And a temporary shelter is perfectly respectable. Nobody wants to put down roots where they don't want to stay, okay? If you want to put down roots, you must know you want to stay there. If you're going to do some witchcraft about it. Okay, so let's say you're living in an apartment, right? An apartment, just somewhere in America. The first thing is to sort of, I'm an animist, okay? So that's where I'm coming from. The first thing is to really understand how you feel about your apartment. Who are the spirits there? Who are the people who have lived there before? And how is it orientated? To me, as an animistic witch, that's the very most important thing. Where is east? Where is north? Where is south? Where is west? Like, what's the circle? I mean, God, it's so complicated because are you moving in or are you already there? Okay, let's take a case of you're already living there. Mm-hmm. Just decided to cleanse your apartment. Okay, so here you are in your apartment and you're like, okay, I need to do a cleanse. All right, take a deep breath, honey, because it's not going to be as easy as you think. No, really. Okay, so first of all, you're going to have to actually clean the place nicely.
Like a physical cleaning.
Like
you get your bottle.
Physical cleaning.
You vacuum, bottle of Mr. Clean, mop the floors, that kind of thing.
Right, you've got to do a good, deep physical cleaning. Now, here I have a caveat, right? An important caveat. Because I do not want people who feel disempowered by cleaning to feel that they are disempowered. You know, do your best. That's all. That's all that needs to happen. Do your best. You don't have to go, like, crazy minimalist tossing out all if you are a person that has issues with cluttering or messiness, take an intentional thought into your head and be like, let's clean this to the best of my abilities, and even more than the best of my abilities.
Yeah, we were talking about that at the beginning, and that sometimes you run into, maybe it's not specific to the witchcraft community, it's just that this happens everywhere, that you run into people, I've run into people in the witchcraft community who have an issue with, with hoarding or with not cleaning, and it becomes absolutely overwhelming, and it's just kind of saying, just take a step at a time. You know, like my husband and I are battling a mess of invasive plants right now at our home. And if we were focusing on all of them that need to be cleaned out, I think I would just hide under a table and not go outside. But if I can say, we're just going to work on this section today, that feels good because you look out and say, wow, we got something done. Yeah, there's more to do. There's a dead tree that's got to be taken down. And same thing within the house, especially living in a small space, they clutter really, really quickly. So...
It just has to be organic, Some people are really good at cleaning, some people are not good at cleaning. And the thing is, I don't believe that magic should be hierarchical, If you're going to do a cleansing, if you don't have the spoons to, deep clean your whole apartment, that's fine. Like, just do the dishes or whatever, you know, just...
Do the dishes and add one more thing, like, and I'm going to wipe down the cabinets.
You know? Right.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's helpful to tell people that they should strive for I don't believe that it is helpful to push people to the idea of perfection. I believe that that is a transcendentalist ideal, and transcendentalism runs against the grain of animism. Animism is immanism. It is about settling into the real fundamental reality of where you are in the world. Anyway, okay, so you're in your apartment. First thing you got to do is you got to clean, right? You got to clean. The best time to do this is the new moon, obviously. Well, not obviously. Some people who might be listening to this might not know that. But you want to do it around the new moon. That's a great time. And actually, as the moon is waning, it's a great time to, like, set yourself on a schedule. And actually, it's a great housekeeping tip as well, right? Because if you know that you have a once a month deep clean coming up on the new moon of every month, you can calendar it.
That's actually a really great idea.
Yeah,
that's not something I ever would have thought of. It's to incorporate on the moon schedule,
well,
but that's a wonderful idea.
Much to my chagrin, I'm a Hecate bitch now. Okay? I've always tried to resist it, but now I am. All right. And so here's the thing: in the Hellenic system of mysticism, on the new moon, that's Diepnon, Hecate Supper, all right? And that's a day that you have to have, because the Greeks were slobs, by the way, interestingly enough. If you read the actual literature, it's like, that's when all of the food scraps would have been picked up off the floor.
Oh, God! Ew.
And the altars would have been swept, you know? They were messy bitches, all right? So Diepnon, new moon, so that's what I do in my household, is we clean from the second half of the waning moon through to Diepnon, which is on the new moon, Hecate's day, and then we celebrate with a clean house. Okay, so, and I'm not trying to tell anybody to join some cult. But what I would say is it's good to have a day that is sacred, that is the cleaning day, that is in some way sort of sacred to that. Okay, so that's just about cleaning. I do want to talk about the fact that, again, I'm an animist, and so a lot of my process involves spirit. So I'm looking at like 5 different altars right now in the living room, and I know that my roommate has one in his room. I have one in my room. I was just reading a German quote the other day that says, "A house without a spirit is a cursed house." Now, this is more something that I would recommend to witches, is like, tend your altars, make sure your altars are well taken care of.
So can you
put fresh candles on there?
Fresh, I was just going to say, what are some of the things that you do to tend your altars? I know for me, fresh flowers, candles are one, those sorts of things. Leaving
Keep up on your offerings.
Yeah, leaving a glass of wine out, but not for too long. If it gets moldy, then that's not very good. What do you do to tend your altars?
Oh my God, let's talk about like not taking offerings out on time, because that's a real problem.
Yeah.
No, me and my roommate go through that all the time. It's like taking the offerings out is something you really need to be very on top of, because that is a thing you need to offer the spirits, offerings, and the offerings are fresh and beautiful, and you can't let them rot. Okay, wait. Let me just pull my head back into the game here for a second. Okay, so you know, animism, you know, that's how I'm going to talk. I'm not really interested in talking about smudging and stuff like that, and that's a whole different conversation. I do believe that it's important to have household spirits, and I do believe that they need to be fed, and I do believe that they need to be honored, and that's a whole thing in and of itself. Now, let's talk about people who may be a little bit more secular than, you know, maybe people who are, like, really working paganism and or any other kind of magical tradition very seriously. This does not exclude them. Put something in your house, but a little table.
So here's a here's a question for you. So if somebody moves into a place, they might say, how do I find my household spirit? And maybe they work with gods or goddesses of the home. Maybe they're really close with ancestors who were housekeepers or stay-at-home parents or, you know, even like guardians of some way. They're, you know, police officers, people that can protect the home. But what if you've got a witch who was like, well, what's behind door number three? If I'm not into the gods, I'm not connected to my ancestors, how then do I connect with household spirit?
All right, well, wash the whole place down, first of all.
Yeah, but would you, like, identify, like, would you, like, call, would you name the house, you know, or would you try to do some kind of summoning spell to bring the household spirit forward?
Well, first of all, I would do a whole reaving of the house.
Okay.
Okay, so I would sane/reave the entire house down. If I was moving into a place, I would walk into the threshold, you know, before I even put my bags down outside the place. I wouldn't even move my bags down to the threshold. I would come in and I would put clumps of salt, like big ass, like crystal salt, in every single corner of every single room. Right? The next thing I would do is I would take white candles and I would put white candles in every single room in the house. And if I was being super severe about it, there would be beeswax candles. But, you know, white candles, most importantly.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would close every single door. And then I would come back to the front of the house. And this would be after having seriously mopped and vacuumed and done all that shit. Then, starting from the front door, I would lead with an incense, probably of frankincense, myrrh, and opopanax, three kings. It's very versatile. And I would go around the entire house, going clockwise, and I would make an equal arm cross over every door. I would go around. It takes a long time. You get back to the front door, you put down your incense, right? Your earth is already there. Next, you want your water. Now, I recommend hyssop or rue for this. A cold infusion, spring water or seawater. You want to sort of like scrunch it up into the water so that all of the essences, the green stuff comes out into the water. You kind of like rend it up with your hands in the seawater.
So it's a fresh herb that you're really crushing in there.
Yeah, it's a fresh herb. Yeah.
Yeah, I would also, yeah, just throwing out this for people, I also am a big fan of lemon balm, as we all know, because I have a massive bunch of it growing in my house, so that's a good one too. Also, mint and parsley. Those are herbs that I like.
Yes. The greenness. You really want to get that green instead of cold water.
So just,
then you spritz that around, you know. Try to not get it on the walls, because some of those plants can stain.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that can, you know, so put it on the floor. And then fire. I like to get a mirror and a candle. And in this case, preferably a beeswax candle. And then you shine the fire into the walls of the house. You hold the mirror, literally, so it's reflecting the candlelight back against the wall. And you seal the house with fire.
I love it.
You, yeah, you seal. steal the entire house of fire, and this is a good time to have a chant. All of these things should be done with a chant, and I'm not going to try to lead anybody's chant because, you know, that's going to be up to you and your affiliation with your deities and your spirits, but you seal the house with all four elements, right? And then to answer your question, what would be the household spirit? Well, then you make a table for them, and you put a glass of spring water, maybe with a sprig of rosemary in it. You know, if you're not attached to your ancestors, then just leave it like that, a white candle, some flowers, you know? Mm-hmm. And if we're really talking animistically, if we're going into European tradition, which we're not necessarily, but, you know, a little butter and whiskey on that table as well, you know? But in any tradition, that would actually work, actually.
Yeah, and I feel like... You know, some things are super traditional, but that's because that's what people had around, you know. But if you're someone who you don't have butter in the house, you don't keep butter, you don't keep alcohol in the house, maybe make a cup of coffee, you know. That isn't necessary.
Coffee or tea is a very, very good offering. Coffee or tea is a very good offering. So is rice.
Okay, so anything that evokes hospitality, you know, and being well fed. And rice is a big one that way, too.
Yeah. Rice, yeah, if butter or beans is not in your house, rice, coffee, tea, yes, very good suggestions, coffee, tea, honey. Yeah, in terms of, like, offering to spirits, I mean, it's always good to be extravagant if you want something extravagant, but even if you want something extravagant, the spirits are not here to put you into poverty, so you should never, like, go and buy something you can't afford.
You don't need to buy a $150 bottle of wine. Where would you draw the line as to things that energetically people should be doing to care for their own home, and then ways that maybe they would want to have someone else possibly come in? How would you kind of describe those categories?
Well, when you feel there is something wrong and you need to bring somebody else in, that's where the line is.
I think it's also like if you feel like there's something bigger and nastier that's beyond you, or maybe you've not been well, you've gone through trauma, you've been sick, you've had a major life change and you're heartbroken, that's a time I feel like
mentally
it's,
you're
mentally,
not in a good
it's
space.
Like, or you can't see outside of, because sometimes it's people's own sadness and grief and anger that become
that's
the
very
negative.
Kind of thought. Yeah, girl.
Yeah, that become the pain that's in there.
Yes.
And then I think at that point it's like you got to have someone else to come in to help you see your way out of it. You know, so
and you know, as tarot card readers, you know, for me, often the Nine of Swords is like you've got to cleanse your house.
That's a good one.
Yeah. You know, I see it so many times in readings. Nine of Swords, time for a house cleansing.
I love that. And so as a tarot reader, I'm taking that with me.
Yeah, so, I think a lot of people...
Please do, because I found it infinitely useful. Like, in a specific constellation of cards, when you see the Nine of Swords coming up, and you're like, how's your house feeling? And they're like, oh, shitty. And I'm like,
Yeah. Well, this is great. So, Damon, tell people how they can find you if they needed...
I have one more thing to share with you.
Okay.
As a traditional witch, I believe that the home begins with landscape. It begins with the world that we inhabit more than just the four walls and the roof and the ceiling. And... if one really, really wants to have peace in their home, and this is like very old Scottish and very old traditional witchcraft, if one really wants to have peace in their home, they have to have peace on the land. During the bright hours, the wayfarer should prepare in both mind and spirit to go wandering in an intentional manner around the furthest boundaries of the area in which they seek access. It is advised to pay attention to such landmarks that present themselves with special characters. Examples of such would be crossroads, both three and fourfold, natural bodies of water, churches, abandoned structures, local plants of potency and virtue, border markers, cemeteries, and of course, venerable trees in both solitude or grouped together. On the evening that the work is to be undertaken, the wayfarer should attend all matters of the home in such a way that they should be found if there was no possibility of return. All things should be cleaned and returned to their proper place. All unfinished tasks should be hidden from sight. A small bag should be prepared containing such things as which will serve the purpose of celebrating and placating such beings and potentialities, and which are sought by the cunning and the quick. Such things should be pure and of the land, and may include honey, wine, eggs, home-baked bread, treasured objects of glass, clay, or metal. The only limit is the practitioner's imagination and skill. Mm. These limits are never a failing. If possible, the wayfarer should prepare for egress by bathing in an infusion of birch bark and spring or rainwater. The infusion should be boiled for 9 minutes at an hour appropriate to the wayfarer's intent. Birch is a protective tree, but also conveys the virtue of freshness and inner light, and liberates the wayfarer from hindrance and opens the ghostly roads. Spiritual bathing must happen by candlelight and without the intrusion of soaps or unguents. Packed, bathed, and ready to set forth, the wayfarer should sit without electric light in a room illuminated by a single flame and gazing steadily into its center. At this point, a verse of power may be recited. My preference, number 8181 in the Wood Folk Song Index. 10 points for being a nerd. How many miles to Babylon? 3 score and 10. Can I get there by candlelight? Yes, and back again. If your heels be nimble and your toes be light, you may get there and back again, all by candlelight. Extinguishing the candle, the wayfarer should sit in as much darkness as can be gathered. The darkness should be longed into, yearned into, from the bottoms of the feet, the crowns of the head, from behind the eyes, the ears, the palms of the hands, the beating heart, the stomach, the tongue, and all other parts. The spine shall manifest as crossroads, indicating both outward and inward. At this point, time shall suspend, and something will extend an invitation. The wayfarer shall stand and leave in the darkness, into the darkness, to answer the call. The feet shall lead, and the hands will know where to offer and when. And so the land is opened, and so the land is healed. So, that is my true belief, is you want a good home, talk to the land spirits. Hmm. Talk to the land spirits, get it.
Is that a spell that you wrote? Or is that just one you used?
That's mine.
Oh, you wrote that?
Oh, you sound so surprised.
It's extraordinary.
She's surprised that I know smart people.
It's extraordinary. That's what that's about. I was just like captivated listening to that. That was wonderful.
It sounds like something that you picked out
old.
Of a 16th century.
That's what I'm saying. It sounds.
But then again, you've got to remember, we're pretty sure that Damon's about at least 700 years old, but he's
well, then there you go.
I'm so surprised.
Wait, why is everybody so surprised I wrote that?
Because it sounds so perfectly old.
It does. Sounds like an ancient. It sounds like it came from some sort of secret ancient text. It's so beautifully.
Well, it comes from a secret ancient lineage, girl.
Oh, it's extraordinary.
I know. And I love how you sang this. You sang us the chant as well.
That's wonderful.
Oh.
Well, you know, but just to bring it back to the, bringing back to the purpose of the spell is, you know, if people are really looking for a pure house, go out there and talk to the land.
Yeah.
Go out there and talk to the land. Like, find, if this is your home, if this is where you're living, go outside your door. Go find the east, the west, the north, and the south, and go and take things to them. Go walk out in the night and feel the spirits. Now, this is, you know, this is not exactly 101. This is sorcery. You know, go out and feel the spirits. Give offerings. Take things to them. Know and bury things. Bury wards. Like, put things in the ground. It doesn't even have to be in your actual house or around your house. It can be far from your house. Just, like, know, like, take out a compass and be like, oh, this is east from my house. This is north from my house. Build a huge protective barrier. That's what I do. I shouldn't be saying that. I'm giving away my defense secret.
Right. I think what you've added, which I think is really marvelous, is that, you know, when people think of their home, they do think of the confines of the walls, and they think of very kind of generic ways that they might want to cleanse. And you're broadening that and saying that you need to realize your home is a part of something bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah, part of a community. You're yes. part of a community. You're part of a land. You're part of, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And if you want to be really safe, if you really want to be safe, you don't want to just be, like, putting yourself in a shell. You want to make sure that you are in contact and in relation with all the spiritual forces around you, and that you're doing good by all of them, you know? There's nothing worse than just hiding away in an apartment, especially here in New York. You know, people die that way. You know, You got to get out. And of course, to everybody's best abilities. You know, if that is not available to you, then ward your apartment just inside of itself. But if you can walk the land, absolutely do it. And if you cannot, ask a friend to do it for you.
Yeah. Right. So there's nothing wrong with that. Especially, if you can't get out or you've just been sick and it's just not working for you, ask a friend.
Ask a friend.
Yeah.
Tell them what to do. It's a favor. It's a fun favor, actually. And this is something that I want to say to disabled witches, actually. And I say this in humility. Learn your witchcraft and have your friends. And your friends want to help you. Well, would you go and ward the land around my home?
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, and I feel like that's really important. And also for able-bodied witches to check in on their friends that have limitations and see if there's a way to help. Like, we can help each other that way, you know? But
absolutely. And that's something that I think that's another conversation that we need to have, you know, and I mean, in terms of the elders of witchcraft, is like sort of rolling back the monetization of it and being like, how can we be of service?
Mm-hmm.
In ways that are not money bound.
And we certainly could delve into this a lot longer, but I'm afraid we are going to have to wrap now. So I wanted to make sure that you got a chance to tell people where they could find you if they wanted to follow your work or keep in touch.
Catlinebooks.com is where I'm a reader. I do have a website. It's a long time under construction. I'm very embarrassed about it, but it's called thehouseofstang.com.
Yes.
And, yeah.
You're also on Twitter, and I think I've seen you on Facebook.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook as Damon Stang, and on Twitter as Revert Star.
Well, this has been absolutely brilliant, and it makes me miss you.
I am so bad.
I'm looking forward to more misadventures next time we get together. we spend too much money on wine and then go cry at someone's musical performance again. So
next time you're coming into town, we're going to the cemetery.
Okay. We can
do that.
We're going
to the cemetery. I'm going to take you to see Lola Montez.
All right. All right, my friend. Well, thank you for coming on today. This has been wonderful.
Yeah, I really feel like there was some really, like I said, I felt like you offered some really great perspectives of getting people kind of a broader perspective of what it really means to protect and cleanse your home.
Yeah.
And I think that's phenomenal.
All right, Damon, thank you so much. I know our listeners will appreciate it too. And we will see everybody in 2 weeks.
Join us on the first and third Mondays of the month for magical tools, tips, and stories about living as a witch in today's world.
Find us at thatwitchlife.com for archived episodes or to ask your burning questions for us to answer in a future podcast.